You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
For Dear Science this week, we are joined in studio by our expert, Dr. Kushla McGovern. Kushla, how are you this morning?
Very good, thanks.
How are you guys? All right, yeah, pretty good. First off, we've got here a story that I recognised. I was quite proud of myself, actually, for recognising this one. An orangutan treating its facial wound.
Yeah, so hopefully people have seen this picture going around in the last week because this paper's just come out of this orangutan that's got this facial wound on its right flange. And so an orangutan's, a flange is just those cheek pads that you see, and they basically, they develop on sexually mature males. And so this orangutan named Rakus is lives in the Gunung Lesser National Park in Indonesia, which has now made my bucket list of things to see in the world before I die. And it's basically, it's got this area that's got a population of orangutans that have been studied quite extensively over the last few years. And what happened in June last year is the team of scientists observed that Rakus had injured himself or had an injury on his face. He basically, if you've seen the pictures, a big chunk out of his right flange. Now, when they observed for a little bit longer, they saw that also inside his mouth there was a wound. They don't know how this happened. They kind of guessed that it was possibly a fight, you know, where the orangutans are fighting for dominance, and that this injury may have happened then. But what was really interesting about this was they were watching Rakus over a few days, and on 3 days after they noticed the wound, they're observing him eating these leaves and stems of this vine from a plant called Vibraria tinctoria, or for locals it's known as Aka Kunang. And it's not unusual for the orangutans to eat this plant, but it kind of also is, like only about half of the orangutans they observe eat it, and it's a very minor part of the diet. So they're kind of going, okay, well that's interesting. They were watching a little bit more, and what they noticed was he started to just, instead of eating the plant, he was just chewing it. And then he put his finger in his mouth and he got some of the plant juice and he wiped it onto the wound. And he did this again and again, and for 7 minutes he kept just wiping this plant juice on the wound, which is kind of interesting. It's repeated behaviour. And then a fly flew onto the wound, and so he took out a big chunk of the mushed up leaf and covered the whole wound with it, like kind of like you're thinking like a poultice or something like we would do in traditional medicine. And so they kept observing Rakus over the next few days, and they noticed he slept a lot more than usual. But within about 8 days, this wound had kind of closed over, and within probably, I think it was about 30 days, it had totally healed up. And when they identified the plant that he was, they had identified the plant that he was eating, this Aka Kunang, which is actually well known in traditional medicine of the area for treating a lot of different different things. It's often used in malaria treatment and stuff. And if you actually study this plant, what you find is it's really high concentrations of bioactive compounds in it. One of them is something called furandioterpenoids, really big name for a class of chemical compounds that are basically antibacterial, antifungal, anti-inflammatory, lots of other anti-effects like antioxidant and anti-carcinogenic. Also has high levels of things called protoburbine alkaloid, palmitine, and one that's really hard to say, jatrorazine. I'm still not sure I got that quite right. But all these molecules kind of have these therapeutic effects. So this is really cool. Like, this orangutan treated its own wound. And so this is the first time that this has been observed, active treatment of a skin wound. There's been animals particularly in the great apes, noticing that they chew on leaves or bitter pith and stuff, which have anti-parasitic sort of properties. This is the first time I'm seeing a skin wound. So then you're going, okay, well, how intentional was this? Did the orangutan know what it was doing? And what the researchers basically said is they err on the side of it was intentional, because the orangutan only put the plant juice and the plant chewed up material on the wound. It wasn't like they covered his whole face or, you know, all his body kind of thing. that he did it several times, like he kept repeating it over 7 minutes, which is a relatively long time to keep doing something. And so that's where they're thinking, yeah, it was probably intentional, but how did he know to do this? Was it accidental? So basically he was chewing on the leaf, he maybe touched his face, went, oh, that doesn't feel as painful, so I'll keep doing that. Or potentially like he's seen other orangutans do it, and so it's social knowledge spread socially from individual to individual. But yeah, it was really cool.
Really interesting stuff. And then next here we've got beluga whales changing the shape of their foreheads.
Yeah, so this is a bit of an older study, but because I was kind of looking at animal behaviour after looking at the orangutans, I thought this was kind of cool. So beluga whales, they're also known as white whales. This is basically not because they're like the whales out of Moby Dick, but because they're white to grey in colour, and they're kind of the only whales that are this colour. Also called sea canaries, I found out, because they've got a really high-pitched call. But why they're quite distinctive beyond their high pitch and their colour is they've got no dorsal fin, so that's the fin on the back of the back. But what's really distinctive about them is they have this protuberance on the top of their head. So they've like got so this is why they're sometimes called melon heads as well, which I thought was quite funny. And actually, it turns out that this protuberance, or there is this basically part of the body in toothed whales that's called the melon. In whales, you get baleen whales, such as like the humpback, which that's when they have comb-like structures in their mouth and they filter feed. And then you get toothed whales, which, as you'd imagine, they have teeth, and so they catch fish and squid. So beluga whales are a toothed whale, and all toothed whales have this melon. And what the melon is essentially fatty tissue that acts as a lens for better echolocation and audible communication. But the beluga, despite, like, it has, its melon is very prominent, but it also can change the shape of it, which is, it's the only one that does this. And they're kind of like, why can it do this? So again, a observational study where you have a group of scientists who watched four belugas that were in an aquarium, so they were captive. They watched them for 4 hours a week for a whole year, and they identified 2,570 different melon shapes in this beluga. So a lot. So they then pared this down, and they basically classified them into five different types of shape. You had flat, where it was basically the flattened front on the head, top of the head, a lifted, where it kind of raised it to appear taller, pressed, where they really squashed their melon down against their skull, pushed, where they pushed it forward so it was more bulbous, and then shake, where they kind of wobbled their melon backwards and forwards. So you can actually see, watch the videos online. It was quite funny. And what they kind of, so they identified these different shapes, but what they also noticed was that they kind of made these shapes 34 times more when they were interacting with each other than when they were just alone. So they're kind of going, okay, this is probably something like communication of some form. They also noticed that males tended to change their melon shape a lot more than females, like 3 times more. And so again, they also noticed that when you had open mouth interactions between the belugas, they tended to have a pushed melon, whereas if it was courtship, they were shaking it. So you're kind of thinking of it like they were doing a bit of a dance, like you see in the birds and, well, in the human world with courtship. And so they think this is like, it's potentially intentional communication. There is a couple of problems. It is a small sample size. Like, this data was all off these four captive belugas. They did look at another population of belugas of 51 where they kind of saw similar things, but they definitely need to do a lot more study. And it's also very limited social and behavioural context because it is only those four in captivity.
And then moving on here, we've got development of plant-based materials to make a skin healing bandage.
Yeah.
Skin burn healing bandage.
So kind of fitting on the theme of the orangutan healing its own wounds. So you think of bandages that you use for skin wounds, right? You use them, you don't use them for a long period of time. You have to replace them a lot. It's a lot of waste that gets generated. So there's this group in Italy that's a material scientist. We're kind of interested in having a bit of a more environmentally friendly sort of method of making bandages. And so what they did was they basically decided they wanted to make it from plant-based materials. So it needed to be biodegradable but biocompatible as well. So they used maize, which is basically like corn, and they extracted the main protein out of that, which is called zein. And then they also took pectin, which is a sugar you find in some fruit peels, such as apples. And they basically made a mixture of these two compounds, and then they used a technique called electrospinning. And electrospinning is basically when you have a viscous solution, so in this case the zein and the pectin, you squeeze it through a needle. That needle has a high charge, a high voltage applied to it, and it gets forced out that needle, and it's attracted to an acceptor plate, which has an opposite charge. And so what basically happens is that jet gets accelerated, that it really thins out, so you get a really thin fiber, and you catch it on your acceptor plate, and you can basically have really thin fibers and make a non-woven mat, or you can do other things depending on how you design your experiment. In this case, they just wanted a non-woven mat. So you're thinking of basically looking a little bit like your fabric in your clothes. And then they put it into some calcium to cross-link the fibers, because that gave them the material properties they were interested in. And so now they had a scaffold for a bandage. So you can kind of think of it like what you would, your gauze that you would ordinarily put. It's a bit wetter, it's a bit more like a hydrogel, but you can put it on top of your wound. So that's, you know, we now got a biodegradable bandage, but they wanted to go beyond that, and they wanted to have this bandage actively help with the healing. So if you think about when you get a burn, it gets red, it swells, right? This is inflammation. Inflammation is basically our body's natural defense for trying to heal us. But if you get too much, it's not a good thing. Basically, what happens if you get too much inflammation, you'll get a lot of what are called oxygen-free radicals, and these impede your healing. So they decided, okay, well, what can we add to our plant-based scaffold to aid in healing? And so they chose vitamin C, which we all know has antioxidant properties, and it's also anti-inflammatory. And so what it basically is that this bandage allows slow release of the vitamin C over time. And so it basically, the idea is that it stabilizes into inflammation and mitigates the free radical production. So you don't get those negative effects with what that can occur if you get too much inflammation during healing. They obviously had to test it with skin cells to make sure that it was biocompatible, and they did that. Things looked good. When they put it with fibroblasts, they noticed that they had a reduction of 70% in terms of oxygen-free radicals, so that was a big plus. They also noticed that they had upregulated expression for the genes that produce collagen, which we need for when we're producing skin, and also modulated the expressions of some genes that would lead to fibroblast death. And obviously with healing, we want the fibroblast there because we want them producing the extracellular matrix that is our skin. They also then did a mouse study just to see on a live system how it works. So they did have to burn the mice with UVB, so they used to use light, which is but only a small area and very controlled. And what they did find is that when they used their bandage, they had a 50% lower concentration of these three key inflammation molecules. So they were seeing better healing. And so, yeah, it looks like it's working. Now what they need to do, obviously, is a lot more study on the system. They also want to see if they can adapt this framework to healing other sorts of wounds, like skin ulcers and lacerations. And they want to move to away from just using plants to actually using food waste, because they're really interested in completing the circular economy and using a waste product, which is admirable. And we'll look out to see if it happens.
Yeah, really interesting stuff. Look forward to food waste bandages maybe sometime in the future. All right, so thank you, Kushla, for coming in today. Thank you, Mota, and thank you, Science. We'll be right back after this short break. Keep it on the B.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.